This podcast is brought to you by the Dutch media platform Triathlon Inside. One, two, three, four. What is up, guys, and welcome back to Grit Grind Girona. Today's guest knows what it means to fight her way back, mentally, physically, and emotionally. Irish former professional cyclist Imogen Cotter isn't just a racer. She's a writer of comebacks, a speaker of truth, and a fearless voice in a sport that doesn't always make space for vulnerability. From Girona's smooth tarmac to the rough patches of recovery, Imogen's journey is one of scars, but also strength and resilience. This episode isn't just about cycling. It's about what it takes to keep going. We'll talk about recovery, rediscovery, and what it really means to rebuild not just your body, but also your belief. I'm your host, Milan, and welcome to Grit Grind Girona. Imogen, welcome as well.
Thank you for having me, and such a nice intro.
I'll do my best. I'm doing my best.
No, I'm really happy to be on the podcast. And just thanks for having me on.
Yeah. So, how are you doing?
Good. Yeah, I arrived back really late last night to Girona at like 2 a.m. I was back in Ireland for a week doing some work with road safety. I do like some talks on road safety, so I was working with a couple of companies in Ireland doing that.
Yeah.
And just spending time at home, which I always find like really like recharges me. So now I'm back here.
Yeah.
And I've got a couple of days at home with Yuri. I suppose people who are listening might know who Yuri is.
Maybe not.
Yuri Kulin, my fiance. So I've got a couple of days at home with him before he heads off again. So it's kind of nice that our paths are crossing.
Nice, yeah. And we are going to be talking with the two of us today, but there's also something else next to you.
Yeah, Ishbeen is sat beside us on her heating pad and covered in a blanket. So yeah. She's our miniature Dachshund who just lives a life of luxury.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
As she should.
So Ishbeen is, let's start off over there. Ishbeen is the dog of you guys, right?
Yeah.
She
was my retirement present to myself.
Oh, wow. Okay,
that was,
really?
Yeah. When I was going to retire, I wanted to get... Well, I wanted her for ages. And then, you know, when I actually had retired, I was like, now I can do it.
Yeah. So retire from cycling, right?
From cycling, yeah. Hopefully I'll have another job in the future. But when I retire from like bike racing...
How long have you guys got an Ishbeen now?
Since November.
November, oh yeah.
Yeah. So it hasn't been that long, but she just feels like, for me, that she's just been part of my life forever. I just absolutely love her.
Yeah. And she's going on a lot of trips with you as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, because she's so small, I can bring her on the plane on like my lap in a bag, and she just sleeps the whole time. She's just a dream dog, so can't complain.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, well, so as always, I'll explain a little bit about what we are going to be doing in this podcast. So before we start recording, I explain a little bit as well, but for people who are listening. First of all, of course, we would like to get to know our guest a little bit better, and we start it off with a round of quick fire questions. In general life, that's what we're going to do first. After that, we're going to be talking a little bit about the answers, but also like discover a little bit more about life in general, where did she start at with sports and up till now. Then, of course, we're going to be doing a little bit of talks about Girona, because in the end, we are in Girona right now.
Uh-huh.
And after that, we are can look a little bit as well to what's coming up. That's going to be a little bit, you told me already, a tricky one, but we'll see about that. So first things first, we're going to start off with a round of quick-fire questions. Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, let's go. Okay, what is your proudest achievement in sport?
Oh, in sport, winning the nationals. It was always my dream. So
national champion of Ireland.
Great, great feeling. That's it. Oh, and then I guess, sorry, I'm already rambling. I can talk a lot on these things. Might have to cut me off. I think it's kind of split in two parts, because that's definitely like an achievement that like I think is most general. But then actually getting back on my bike after like I had a huge crash, that was a really big achievement for me. But I feel that it's maybe there's not like a physical accolade that I was given. I wasn't given like a you know, cup to hold. But for me, that was a huge
personal
as well.
Victory.
Yeah, absolutely.
What has been your hardest race or event?
Oh my God. Actually, it was here in Girona. It was the first gravel race I did. And I did, it was like 4 years ago now. I did the Canyon Pyrenexus Challenge, and it was 350K. And I got lost, so I added on extra kilometers, and I ran out of water, and it was just such a difficult day. And I spent the whole race, that was in 2021, I spent the whole like event waiting to see everybody that I knew who was doing gravel kept talking about, you know, how they reached this point where it's like, and you get this like high, and the, you know, it feels amazing. And I just spent the whole thing thinking, when is it coming? And then I was lost, hungry, so thirsty.
Well, if it's 350K, that's a long time thinking about when is the end coming.
So the good part came at 350K.
Yeah, okay, wow, that's a crazy event.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
What languages do you speak?
I speak English, Irish, and I mean, I would say Dutch, but I understand everything you guys are saying. I just make loads of mistakes when I'm also talking back, but okay. I can get by with Dutch.
Yeah.
And very little Spanish.
Spanish, okay. Well, we're going to discover why Dutch as well in a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
What's your most memorable finish line moment?
Yeah, it would be the Nationals.
Okay.
Just like this feeling. It was so funny because when I won it, I had wanted it so badly that I crossed the line, and it was like, I can't describe it. It was like the road opened up in front of me. I couldn't believe it. It was like the road I was on felt like it was four lanes wide. And I came back the next day to watch the junior girls who were racing, and I was like, it can hardly be this road. No way. Because
like,
it was
a
like just a normal road. And I was like, yeah. No, this can't be it. So yeah, that was it for me.
Who is one person you look up to for inspiration?
I don't like look up to a lot of celebrities. I think actually you probably feel the same when you're here in Girona. You can just draw inspiration from like, there's so many people around you who are doing crazy things. I mean, nobody's aiming for average here. Average becomes normal here. I think like if I was back in Ennis and I knew someone who did like a 3-hour marathon or like a 3:15 marathon, I'd be blown away. But people here do that and they're disappointed. It's really strange. So I think I just draw inspiration from everybody around Girona who I train with.
Well, maybe not anymore for like cycling races, or maybe if you look at in the past. For what is or was your dream race destination?
Actually, Spain. I would have liked to have done like a lot of hilly races here. If I could have gone back like before, let's say, I didn't have a big crash. Mm-hmm. That was really what I was looking forward to in 2022, was actually getting to do races that were hilly, because I'd been learning how to race in Belgium, which is flat. And I was really looking forward to getting to hills.
Okay. What is your favorite movie?
There's a couple, but I think Stand By Me always comes to mind. I just think that's such a beautiful story.
Stand By Me?
Yeah, it's like a coming of age film. It's just amazing.
What is your favorite sport outside of cycling, running, or triathlon?
I was going to say,
you've done those as well. So,
I think, you know, when it comes to the Olympics, I love to watch the gymnastics. Anything that's kind of, I don't know, the gymnastics, the diving, that kind of thing that we miss in endurance sports, where we'll push ourselves and it can be ugly, and you don't have that in those sports where it has to be beautiful, like diving and gymnastics. I think that's a nice contrast.
Yeah. If you could go for a bike ride or a run, maybe nowadays, with any athlete in history, who would it be?
Oh my God, that's a really good question. Any athlete in history, who would it be?
Or currently?
Yeah, no, I'm trying to think of somebody who's like got a really interesting story. Oh God, I can't think. No. I'm going blank. I'm going to think about that in the background throughout this podcast.
And then somewhere when I think suddenly,
I'll have a spark and I'll tell you.
All right. Who is the funniest athlete you know?
I think Yuri's really funny.
Louis can be pretty funny.
He can be pretty funny. Yeah. It's hit or miss, but when he hits, it's good.
Sometimes some Dutch humor, of course. Are you more of an early bird or a night owl?
Oh, night owl. Yeah, night owl, yeah. Sure.
If you could visit any country tomorrow, where would you go? Or back to where you were yesterday?
Yeah, go back to Ireland. Get me back home.
Yeah,
Ireland? Really, I love Ireland.
Do you listen to any music or podcasts when you're out riding or running?
Yes, I listen to podcasts all the time. And I probably listen to Brittany Broski. I don't know, she's a TikToker. She's very funny. I listen to really girly podcasts. I'm not even going to, I don't need to tell you. I just really like... I like getting kind of lost. Sometimes I listen to educational ones. I go through phases where I'll be like, I'll listen to... Actually, that's untrue. I always listen to The Rest Is Politics, US, but we won't bring that into the podcast. But I really enjoy that. They like break down because obviously everything's happening on such a fast scale these days that they kind of dissect it week by week and they tell you what you need to know about the week just gone. And that's something I really like saving up for one of my runs, which is incredibly boring, actually, now that I say it out loud.
Well, time goes by faster whenever you're listening to other stuff, right? Do you prefer training with other people or on your own?
On my own. I love training on my own. Yeah. Yeah. Always have.
What's one thing on your bucket list?
I actually have a bucket list that I wrote on my phone. It's so boring. I'm opening for people. Obviously, people are listening. So I'm just going to say I'm opening my phone. Bucket list. Okay. Getting a Dachshund was on there. These are crazy.
Well, it's that's already done now. Yeah.
One of them is like, dye my hair blonde.
Has that been done already?
No.
All right.
These are very boring. Go on a solo hiking or biking trip. I'm doing that next month. I'm doing that in June. Fly business class. There's a book I really want to buy that's super expensive. Go to Korea. There's just like, actually there hasn't been a lot of thought put into it, but I do have things on my bucket list that I want to do. Cool. And I think it's nice that they're achievable. Like,
true. Yeah.
You know, buying an expensive book is achievable.
You can also say, I want to be the president of the US or something like that. Yeah. That's not really achievable for us, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. I can't ever take that one off.
Yeah. All right. Well, that were all the questions of our first part of the quick fire questions. It's always nice and fun that people, you know, start explaining things already and these kind of things. But for sure, we are coming back to a couple of the answers in the talks that we are going to be having in the upcoming, 1 hour or 45 minutes. We'll see how long we'll take. But starting off after this round of questions, you're from where in Ireland?
I'm from the west of Ireland, County Clare. Yeah. Okay. So I was born in London, and when I was 4 years old, I moved to County Clare, which is where my dad is from and my mom's family's from. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And until when have you been living there? Until...
Well, I guess I went to university. I spoke Irish at home with my dad. My mom doesn't speak Irish, but we spoke Irish at home. And so I went to an Irish secondary school. So I did my education through Irish. And then after that, I went to a university and did sports science at the University of Limerick. And then graduated and decided I wanted to move to London. So I kind of did that thing. I don't know if people can relate to this, but I think when you graduate, you kind of don't know what you're going to do. And you just end up following what other people are doing. So a lot of people have gone to London.
I did something like that as well, following other people.
It's just like, people are going to London, I'll go to London. Yeah. And then people were interviewing for like recruitment jobs, which I had no interest in. Mm-hmm. My sister had been doing recruitment jobs. So I was like, I'll interview for that as well. So I was actually in London doing that, like interviewing for recruitment. And obviously it wasn't something I ever dreamed of doing, but I was thinking this could just be like my pathway. But at the same time that I was doing that, I was also running a lot. I'd run all throughout my teens. I had like quite an active childhood.
You started out running when you were 8, right?
Yeah. When I was 8, I'd started doing like cross country at like my local field, and then I was swimming all throughout my teens, and then running was my real love. And yeah, when I had moved to London, I was doing running again, but trying to do it on, I had been doing it not on an elite level in Ireland, but I had been doing it with a really great training group.
Yeah.
And, you know, doing the nationals, doing track, just really, I'd been offered a scholarship to the US. And wow. Yeah, I was really going down that path, but I kept getting injured. And it really was mentally very difficult mm-hmm. to always get to near the end of a training cycle and then have to take more rest than was actually necessary. And so when I gone to London, I was like, I'm just going to do this on my own. I'm not going to have a coach anymore. I'm going to coach myself. Mm-hmm. I felt like I'd done my sports science degree. Let's see what I can do. So that's what I was doing. I was trying to, I was preparing for a half marathon, coaching myself and loving it. And I was working in, I didn't get any recruitment jobs. I was actually working as like a receptionist okay. at a yeah. GP surgery. Mm-hmm. And I saw something on Facebook. My mom saw it. It was like a talent transfer program
for Cycling Ireland.
Irish people, yeah. And they wanted to see if there were people who were good at other sport who could maybe translate that over into cycling. And I just booked a flight home. I just said, yeah, I felt like...
We're going pretty faster, but
sorry,
but that's already because I just said you started out running when you were 8 and... When you saw this thing on Facebook about the Irish cycling program, you're 24, right?
24,
exactly.
Yeah. So I've skipped over a lot. A few things happened in between.
but you've talked about the sports thing. You've done running. You've done triathlon.
Yeah.
You went back to running.
Yeah.
And then done a lot of the things you just talked about.
Uh-huh.
And then you saw this thing online on Facebook but it was mainly about track cycling, right?
Yeah, except I didn't know that. Like I saw the poster and it was of a velodrome, but I'd never seen a velodrome.
Okay.
So I just thought like, let me just try out for this and maybe I'll be on the Irish national road cycling team, ? I had no idea.
Yeah.
And I ended up, it was kind of a series of testing. So if your numbers were good enough in the first one, you were given like a 6-week training program and then you could come back. And there was, it kind of just kept getting cut down and cut down. And so eventually after the first one, I my numbers were definitely not good, but they were good enough mm-hmm. to be given the 6-week training program. But it was when I came back from that my numbers had gone, like some of them, I remember one of them had improved like 48% or something.
Wow. In 6 weeks time?
Yeah. I mean, it was a sprint and my sprint was
awful. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well.
I obviously didn't know how to sprint at the first one, but then after a 6-week training program, my numbers were still bad, but they were obviously like nearly double. And I had obviously adapted so well. I'd responded so well to the program that there was potential. And so I think it was on that potential that I was put through to the next round. And I ended up just getting on to the national track team, I guess.
Yeah. And when you came onto that team, to the national track team, it was, how do you call it, necessary to move to Mallorca.
Yeah.
Right?
So I was still living in London, but I kept having to kind of take time off work to go out to Mallorca. And then Cycling Ireland said to us, like, we'll need an extra commitment. Which in hindsight, I'm like, that's crazy because I wasn't being paid. So yeah. I had to kind of take, and I did. It's this thing that I think you can only do when you're younger. And obviously, you obviously have the support of incredible
parents. Necessary, yeah, yeah.
100%. Yeah. But it's also this kind of naive, desire to do anything to achieve greatness mm-hmm. in your sport. You'll just be like, of course, I'm going to leave London and move to Mallorca with no money. Why wouldn't I? What an opportunity.
And then a year later, you'll get the money somewhere or whatever.
Yeah,
right?
You just think it's going to work out, which I think you have to have that naivety a bit when you start out in sport of just thinking the world is my oyster mm-hmm. and having amazing parents.
Yeah, like for sure.
100%. Because my parents said to me, you go for it. This is like once in a lifetime. Mm-hmm. So moved out to Mallorca, which again sounds so incredible. Like it really does sound like a great time. And I have to say it was like, you know, despite all the hardship, because it was really difficult to not have a lot of money and to also be learning. I was on like a fast track program mm-hmm. to learn how to ride on a velodrome. So it was a lot of pressure. You're kind of every day looking at, you were 0.2 of a second slower, like you know, and that's crap. Yeah. And it's hard to actually, when you're in it, it feels so important. Like 0.0 or 0.2 of a second feels like, oh my God, I can't believe I was so slow today.
But now you're
thinking,
like,
I look back on it and I think, wow, crazy. Yeah. It's funny. Anyway, it's like you have that hindsight is a great thing. But yeah, so I moved out to Mallorca. And
do they have in Mallorca a trek? Or is it the open?
It's in Palma. There's that one in Seneu, but then there's a closed one in Palma.
I didn't actually know.
Yeah, it's really... Cool. A good few people train there. Like sometimes you'd have the World Tour guys for testing and stuff.
Nice. But I think, I'm not sure, you tell me. You move to Mallorca, you think, oh, I'm going to enjoy the lovely views about Mallorca. But then you knew it was track cycling and every day you're on the track, right?
Literally, the outside cycling we got was like the 30-minute cycle into Palma. And then you're on the track for hours and then you cycle home. So I got to know this one strip of motorway or like highway something, whatever, a very busy road really well. And then the velodrome. obviously it was incredible. Like it was an amazing opportunity, an amazing time in my life. I got to meet amazing girls who I was able to train with. And
how long have you been there?
I was there for about a year. Okay. And so the reason that I left was we had been training towards the Europeans. Mm-hmm. That was kind of our end goal. And I had been doing everything for that. I had been, even listening to the beeps that the track, you know, envisaging that in my head, you know, that countdown, what am I going to be doing? Where will my hands be? What position will my feet be in? I was ready for it, but I think I maybe technically wasn't the best on the track. Coming to it so late, I was super strong as a cyclist, but maybe not the most technical, gifted person. And I wasn't chosen in the end. They ended up bringing another girl in, and so I wasn't even there as man five. I was just, I was just told, okay, you're done.
You're done.
And
so
I could
were
have
there for
stayed
a year and
for nothing. Yeah, for nothing is what it felt like. But
did you do other races or none at all?
No. So what happened at that stage was that we did one other race, and on the start line, my foot clipped out of the pedal. So it
what was actually that you did because
team pursuit.
Team pursuit.
Yeah, So we were trying to. Like when we came to the Irish track program, there wasn't really much happening and they were trying to bring in new talent to improve on the team pursuit that they'd had years prior. So we were brought in as like the fresh talent or whatever. But following on from when I got rejected for Europeans, I always think that like in my career, I've had this like overarching theme of rejection is redirection. I'm not going to view this as rejection. I'm going to view it as like it could lead somewhere. And that's what happened there. I booked flights to Belgium. I stayed in like some kind of hostel for cyclists.
Why Belgium?
Because I just knew it was good for racing. I didn't know, and I'd never road raced before. Mm-hmm. I'd done one road race before I went to Belgium. I just booked my flights to Belgium, booked a hostel to stay in for 3 weeks, and I raced like as much as I could over there. And then when I was there, I was like, oh my God, this is why people like cycling. I could like experience the atmosphere of being at a race and all of these supporters and, the buzz of being at a race in a peloton. I realized why people like cycling and it wasn't for the velodrome, you know, and things like a coffee stop. We like coffee stops had been frowned upon when we were in this national program. So I was able to just actually get back
you,
to the
you
roots.
Had coffee at the velodrome.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but literally just... a horrible coffee, like a shot of espresso.
Yeah. What year was this when you moved to Belgium?
2018 I went racing there. 2019 I moved there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you said you just booked a flight there and see and race, but were there people you knew there or
no,
did you
genuinely
join any people or
no?
Or
I really I have to say I went there and I knew no one.
Wow.
I was lucky in the hostel that I was staying in. It was for cyclists. It was called The Breakaway, and it was just full of cyclists who had come same as me, like who might come for 3 weeks in the summer or like a month in the summer. And some of them had a car, but otherwise I just took the train or I cycled to the races. I was just really doing it on my own. Yeah. And I got to know people. I think the thing is, when you're there, when you're in Belgium and you're racing multiple times a week, you meet the same people again and again. And then they'll say, oh, you here? Do you need a lift? Mm. And it just ends up getting a bit easier.
But it is pretty, if I think about it, I think at this moment you are 26.
26, yeah. In 2018, I was 25.
25, 26. Yeah. To, well, you already took like, I wouldn't say gamble, but like a cool adventure on when you're 24, you know, move to Mallorca, do something totally new. But then 1 year or 2 years later, you do it again, right? You start a new adventure, you go to Belgium. But it's not a lot of people at that age do these adventures, take these adventures on. It's like, especially on these ages, people want to like
know
what their thing is going to be. But for you to like still explore and you know, try out or have the belief or the idea what you just talked about, like there is an opportunity for me out there, you know, and just go out there and see where it takes you, right?
Well, I think as well, like I said about that naivety, I didn't know how much I didn't know. Mm-hmm. I went to Belgium and I thought like, yeah, I'm good at this. Like, I didn't know how bad I was. And if I'd known how bad I was, then I wouldn't have gone and like taken that huge gamble. Because I think it serves you when you're naive to how much you don't know. It's kind of necessary sometimes.
True.
And I think that's why it kind of, why I was so comfortable taking that risk. Of course, I look back on it now and I moved to Belgium. I didn't speak the language. I didn't organize anything. I was just like, I'm moving to Belgium. You know, there was no thought behind it.
How was it? You've done one race on the track,
mm-hmm.
Where you clipped out at the start. Yeah. You just saw it. But what was it like to like have been riding for a year on the track, training every day on the track to go out and well, first of all, train outside, but also to like go to races and suddenly race or ride in a peloton and these kind of things. What was this transition like?
Very scary. And I don't think I ever got, I think because I came to it so late, I came to it like 24, 25. I never got over that fear the same way that people who start riding when they're 8 do. Mm-hmm. You know, the way that they can move on the bike is just different to the way that the bike feels to me. Mm-hmm. And it was scary. And I think that I was just really strong. I came from the track, which is, you know, it's a lot of like high power efforts and they're short efforts, which served me. When I got to Belgium, even if I was dropped, you couldn't drop me. Like, I was always clawing back. I was like, I'm back again. Mm-hmm. Because I just was so strong myself, and so determined.
Yeah. I actually totally understand what you're saying. I've been doing cycling for like 2 or 3 years and I switched over from triathlon to cycling when I was 17, almost 18. But also that period of time where like you had to race suddenly against people who have been doing it for 10 years or something and they go for gaps you don't even see or are there so many risks in cycling in general? It's crazy. It's so
it really
for me
is.
It was really how do you call it? I was afraid.
Yeah,
a lot of times. You know?
Yeah, I think I never got over that either. I was lucky in situations where maybe things did go my way in kermesses or something, but I never got over the fear, and I was never able to handle my bike the way that girls, you know, who've been cycling all their lives could.
But still, I mean, you're talking about it, but still, things were going better and better.
They were, I guess. I mean, so that was in 2019, and 2019, I had some good results, and then I broke my arm towards the end of the year in like a really slow, stupid crash, and I ended up doing the Zwift Academy, and I got through to the semi-finals. So I kind of, I've always loved Zwift indoor training. And then in 2020, that kind of served me because then it was lockdown. And I was like, well, you know, this is my thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was on the turbo every day, probably.
You ended up being at a e-team as well, right? Like the Zwift e-team?
Yeah, I was on the Movistar e-team.
Movistar, yeah.
Yeah. So that was in 2020, it was lockdown. Yeah. I didn't get to race much. And
were you still living in Belgium back then?
I was, but I spent a lot of time in Ireland throughout the lockdown. And then 2021, I was on the Movistar E team. So that was like E racing every Tuesday night, I think. And it was mental how hard it was.
I can imagine.
It just, so 2021, my season wasn't going so great actually outdoors. Like, there was a lot of setbacks. I kind of thought, I don't know if this is what I'm cut out to do, because I was really afraid and I didn't feel like I could just get in the rhythm. I actually felt like, because I come to it so late in life and then there'd been that whole year of lockdown, I just was like, oh, I haven't raced enough. Like, I've not gone, I haven't started racing in a way where, like, I start in Ireland and it's a bit easier. I've just said, I'm going to Belgium, I'm going to throw myself in here. But then I didn't really have that much chance to race. So, yeah, I felt like I got into 2021 and I wasn't really that skilled, even though I've been cycling for a few years at that stage. But I was lucky because I had the E team and the racing with them, and it just really pushed me on and it gave me a lot of opportunity as well.
Yeah. Yeah, well, in on Swift, you don't... Well, you're riding a peloton, but you don't have to handle like it's a peloton, right?
100%,
It's more about power, or like how strong are you really?
And, yeah.
Well, I think that went really, really well. And then you were riding for the Movistar team, and then some more opportunities came, I think, as well. And was it 21 that you got national champion?
Yeah, end of that year. So it kind of, I did a lot of work that year with a sports psychologist and trying to get to the bottom of this fear. Like, why couldn't I get past it? And why was it paralyzing me in races instead of me being able to manage it? You know, I think everybody in the peloton is slightly nervous, but they're managing it in a different way. So they're able to say, you know,
switch it off.
They switch it off. They say, okay, this fear is not serving me, I'm gonna lock it away. But for me, it was paralyzing. And yeah, so I got to the end of that year, having done a lot of work with a sports psychologist, and things were starting to come together in races. I'd been in like in Kermesse, like in breakaways. I win a race, or I was on the podium in a race in like Kermesses. And you know, I just like things were starting to come together for me. And and then I won the national championships, and that was kind of like, okay, you know, time to leave that limiting belief behind, because I'm here. I can win. I can do this. Like, it was really affirming for me that I had finally, all of these things that I had sacrificed and like tried and failed at and then kept fighting to come back from it, they'd all kind of paid off, because I thought, I'm doing well in actual like big, like races with a big peloton in Belgium, and I've also shown that I can do it like against a smaller bunch sprint in Ireland. You know, I can do this, and I've got the numbers. I'm so strong. Let's go. And then I got my professional contract. So it was like, it all kind of came together at that point, which is quite nice.
So, you were supposed to be riding for the whole year after, in a professional team, also in your Irish, like clothing, stuff like that. But, something else happened, right?
Yeah.
First of all, when we get there, which team did you sign up with?
Phoenix de Koenig.
Phoenix de Koenig.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, that's, I think especially back then, it was one of the strongest teams out there, right?
Yeah, no, it was like a dream come true, honestly. Yeah. I couldn't believe it. And then when they said they were going to pay me, like, I'd be like, I'll do this for free, because like, I was just happy to be living my dream. Like, I was going to get the chance to do these races that I never thought I'd get the chance to do. And then I got the contract and like, I was like, oh my God, I'm being paid. Like, and I can live off this.
Yeah.
And that's when I said, it's time for me to invest in this property. Like, I'm going to move to Girona and just base my winter there and see, you know, how I can do with a good winter of training that isn't in the conditions I was riding in Ireland.
Yeah. So you, this is at the end, in the end of 2021, you decide to, well, you earned the professional contract. You decide to, get a longer time in Girona. Were you here before already as well?
I'd just been here for that horrific gravel race.
Oh, yeah,
but
yeah,
then
yeah,
on
yeah,
the
yeah.
1st of January, 2022, was when I moved here.
1st January, 2022.
Yeah.
And then, that's of course something that's happened that's been a big part of your life in the last couple of years,
yeah,
and will probably always be a big thing in your life, or the thing you talked about. Was it in the end of January?
Yeah, 2022? So it was the 26th of January.
So you were here not even for a month?
No,
almost. And then on a training ride, you got hit by an oncoming car, right?
Yeah. So a driver who had been overtaking another driver came onto my side of the road, and there was a slip road off the side of the road that I was on, and he just took like a racing line towards that. As he was overtaking the cyclist, he just stayed on my side of the road and hit me head on.
Yeah.
So that was, yeah, that was like 3.5 weeks after I'd moved here. And it was so funny because like that morning I'd like had that moment of taking everything in, like, I'm here. We just moved apartments, me and my friend. And it was just like taking everything in. I'm so lucky I'm here.
Everything is going to go from now on.
Yeah, everything's like kind of coming together. Like, let's go. How exciting, how incredible. And yeah, it's just funny how quickly life can change, because instead of it being that kind of dream year of mine, it was just this horror year. It was just the worst year of my life. Yeah. And yeah, something that was really difficult to process, you know, not being able to have that honor of wearing my national jersey in these races that I dreamed of doing. It was a really, really difficult to manage.
It's, of course, I know the story, and we've been talking about it a little bit already in the last year or years, but I'm trying to like find a way to discover a little bit things about here. Do you still like know what happened? Do you still know everything? Or
yeah, so I was conscious until I hit the windscreen. So I can still see
everything coming towards
me. Yeah. It's just this moment. I think like when I look at the car, I was on the right hand side of the road, and the car was coming at me, and I hit like the side that was more towards the left-hand side of the road. So I must have been swerving last minute to avoid it, which, you know, I think for me, that was something I processed in therapy as well. That survival instinct was so strong in me. I had just veered. When I saw him coming towards me, I'd just been like, get me out of here. And I just missed it by, you know, inches. Yeah.
Well, maybe... Sure, we never know, but maybe if you would not have done that, we wouldn't be here talking.
Absolutely, it was all like a matter of inches, because there's a steel beam on the side of the windscreen where my head hit. My head hit the windscreen, but it missed that steel beam by 2 inches, and that would have killed me.
Yeah,
I found it hard to process for a while as well, because I wasn't medically nearly dead. I didn't nearly die on the side of the road. There wasn't a danger that I was going to die once I'd been hit by the car and I was lying on the side of the road. But I had that moment of being like, this is the end of my life. Just here. Mm-hmm. Just here. Like, for what? It felt, that was the only, your life doesn't flash through your eyes. That's what I had.
No. Insane.
Yeah, yeah, really.
Well, you've been talking about it a lot already, but it's still so crazy to hear this story, these stories as well. But it's something, just like you said a couple of minutes ago, it's something that you never think about when leaving for a ride or go out. But indeed, life can change so fast. It's insane. So
I always say it like, now that there's that phrase, man plans, God laughs.
Okay.
Like, and that's honestly, you can't plan anything. Like, and it's really, it's made my experience of just life so different, because you can't guarantee anything. I honestly, you know, we could die tomorrow, and we genuinely could. Why wouldn't I live today just to my fullest? And my fullest doesn't have to be doing something crazy. My fullest can be reading my book
right now,
on the sofa with my lovely dog. Like, and I think it's just taught me the importance of that. And I think it also gave me this really different perspective on cycling. For like 7 years or at that stage, for like 5 years, cycling had been the most important thing in my life. It was like, oh, I have to do this because it determines everything for me. if I don't cycle, what have I done with my day? And then I got back to, I was very lucky after the crash and all of the surgeries.
What are all the things that were like broken. What are the things like from on your body that were like damaged?
So my knee was absolute worst. Like it hit the bonnet, so it took the initial impact. So I had shattered my patella. My knee had just burst open, basically. I had shattered my patella fully. I had fully ruptured my quadriceps tendon and partially ruptured my patellar tendon. I had damaged my, not the meniscus, what had I damaged in there? Something under, the cartilage. I damaged the cartilage, and I had also broken a chunk off my femoral condyle, like the bottom of your femur. So it was a bit of a mess, to put it lightly. And I'd had a surgery here in Girona, which hadn't been the best surgery. My knee was frozen at like 60 degrees of range of motion. So I couldn't do, you can't really do anything with 60 degrees. Like I was able to walk with a limp, but it was kind of stuck at that for 3 months. And my wrist was and still is just, can I curse? Fucked. Like it really was just kind of pulverized, and I had a couple of botched surgeries on it as well. Now I was really lucky. I didn't have a concussion. I didn't have like internal bleeding. I just had really difficult to heal injuries.
Is it probably this is something you talk about a lot because we're going to talk about it in a little bit, but you're doing like talks or about road safety and these kind of things. But is it hard for you to talk about the thing that happened? Or like almost have to rethink about it all the time?
It can be. Like it kind of depends on the day. I think I've cried on stage talking about it before. But then other times I'll just be like watching a presentation, or like there's an advert that I did that I show as part of the presentation, and I'll be watching it and it could be like, oh, like it could almost be like, oh, that happened to somebody else. But it definitely is something, like I did a lot of therapy to process it, because obviously it was traumatic in itself with the fact that I had worked so hard to achieve this dream and then that was stolen from me. But also then I had the trauma of nearly dying. Like that was really hard to process and put in as part of my life. Like to weave that into the fabric of my life was, it felt impossible. And I did a lot of therapy for that. EMDR therapy, which is this like kind of intense form of therapy that makes you recall the trauma whilst moving your eyes in a specific way. And then the trauma is kind of processed and put into your brain, so instead of you feeling like it's currently happening when you think of the flashback, it actually just feels like it's part of your past. Like before I did EMDR, I could see the van, the colors, the noises, and now I can just see a faint outline of the van if I think of it. So I did that, but I think it's something you have to stay on top of, because I can feel that it's kind of the trauma response is coming back a bit, and that like I get shaky if I have to talk about it, and it's okay, we can talk about it, but like it's just something that I feel my body's still holding on to a bit of the trauma. Like I can't watch TV.
Well, that's probably, well, it's
always going to be.
I hope not, and then it's getting better, but it's not just something that happened, right?
It's
crazy.
I can't even like watch TV if there's like a car chasing scene. I get so panicked that they're going to hit somebody. It's just, it is part of my life now. Like you say, it's not something I'm ever just going to get over. I just,
What is this thing with sports people or cyclists in this case, that get a massive injury, in this case, get hit by a car, that they want to come back at a high level?
It's so funny. I was actually looking at Remco at the weekend and I was like, how amazing. Like because he said that he had toyed with the idea of retiring. I think it's because
why didn't you just like
Yeah, why didn't I? I think back on it, why didn't I? Yeah. I think it's because in a situation where everything feels out of your control and it feels abnormal, you cling on to what like is a shred of normality. Mm-hmm. And if you've been an athlete your whole life, that is training. So if I wasn't able to go out on my bike and do a 3-hour training ride, okay, but what can I do that's like still pushing myself to my limits on that day? And maybe that's riding with one leg on my turbo for 30 minutes, which is what I was doing. I was just putting my Banjax leg up on a chair and riding with one leg on the turbo. And of course, I think back and I'm like, you should have just said, it's time to stop. Like, if somebody had gently taken me to the side and said, Imogen, it's enough, I still wouldn't have done it. Like, I still would have been like, you don't understand. Like, this is so important. And I wanted to feel like I had some power as well. My power had been taken away from me by this guy who was just driving his car. But I wanted to be like, no, I'm doing this on my terms. Like, I'm ending this on my terms. And that was kind of my driving force, I think.
Insane.
But I think a lot of athletes have it.
I think so as well. Yeah, for sure. It's but you did it, right? I mean, yeah. It took you a long, long time, but you got back to the highest level in cycling or women's cycling, right?
Yeah.
And how long did it take you to get back on a normal training ride, for example?
I would say that I started to. I actually started training with John Wakefield.
Mm-hmm. He's been on my podcast already.
I knew he had been. It was when I started training with John that I started to see these like glimpses of me pre-crash coming back. And so I started training with him in the middle of 2023. And I was like, I feel like old me again, which was just such a nice feeling. And physically, I was just all there. I was like, I would set like PBs. I was setting crazy numbers. He made me into an animal, but it doesn't matter if mentally you're not there. Like mentally, I was just done.
Was it because we already talked about a little bit that even before the crash, you know, riding in a peloton was we both have experienced it. It's something crazy. People who are not in the sport, they don't really think about it, but it's quite insane. But was it even more after returning to the peloton after the crash, the injury? Mm. Was it even worse?
It was a couple of things. I think it was I struggled to give cycling the same importance, mm-hmm. because I was like I said to you, I could die tomorrow. Like, who gives a shit about? If it goes well, it's fantastic. I love it. But that's not enough if you're an elite sports person. It has to be the most important thing in the world. And like I agree with that. Even for Yuri, like it is the most important thing in the world. I wouldn't want him to be worrying about anything aside from that. But like for me, I just had this perspective shift. And then coupled with that, I also felt like I'd done so much work to get my body back functioning. And did I want to risk that? Mm-hmm. Did I want to have a traumatic brain injury? Did I want to have did I want to be paralyzed? Who knows what could happen in a race? You actually don't know. You're putting your body on the line every time you race. And did I want that? And I didn't. And
but yeah, if I look or think back at that time, I think it also in a certain moment you also didn't really not enjoy, but like want to go outside for training anymore, right? Yeah. You were just scared, right?
Yeah, that was like when I got to 2024.
Yeah,
I was just like I just don't enjoy it. I'd be delaying going out on my bike. It would get to the afternoon and then I'd be like, okay, I have to go out now because otherwise it's dark.
Yeah.
And then I would just be anxious the whole time. And I was getting home from training where I was just crying. Like I was really, every car was something that could kill me. Like I couldn't see anything as just a normal training ride again. I was having really really violent images flashing through my head all the time. I mean, it was really a horrible time. And I just thought, it's not healthy anymore. Like there's no way this is healthy. And it actually like got to the stage when like it wasn't fight or flight anymore. I didn't even know this was a thing, but you can surpass that and go into freeze, which is when your body just says like, enough, mm-hmm. like we can't do this anymore. And I experienced that in a race, and that was the last race I ever did. Yeah. I was just like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's definitely a clue that it's not going into the right direction anymore. This was in the end of, well, not in the end, but it was, when was this race?
That was in February in
beginning
Valencia.
Beginning of 24,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. And so my team, I was with Hess Cycling Team at that time. They were so understanding, honestly, when I called them and I called like the DS at the time and I just explained to him, like I was as honest to him as I am with you right now. Mm-hmm. And he didn't know like the ins and outs of PTSD or, you know, what I'd been through. And he was listening to me and he said, you can't race. Like you can't race. You shouldn't race for like 6 weeks or 4 weeks, whatever it was he said. And yeah, in that time, after a lot of back and forth, I realized it was time to retire.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it a relief?
Yeah, it was such a relief, honestly.
That you don't had to do it anymore. It's not like well, you never have to do it, but for yourself, you're like having a son where you just still told me you have something that I need to train or I need to do this or I need to race. But whenever you made the decision to it's enough right now, you didn't have to anymore, right?
Yeah. I was so tired. I just was so exhausted after it had just been years of, like, it had been 2 years at that stage since the crash, and I was just exhausted. And I don't think I realized how tired I was until I stopped. And yeah, it was a real relief. I had kind of felt, I was getting to the stage when I was going racing that I felt like a lamb to the slaughter. I was like, I know this is going to go badly. I don't feel good about myself. And my Instagram fed into that as well, because people are waiting for a race report. And I just don't know what to say. Hey, I'm really disappointed. I can't pedal my bike anymore.
And you really felt it like, how do you say, like pressure as well, not only for yourself, but like towards social media or towards other people?
Social media is a funny one, because obviously, like, I think 90% or maybe even, I feel like I'm really lucky. Maybe 98% of people who are following me are genuinely cheering for me. That's what it felt like. But for sure, there's people who would look and be like, have you seen her pro cycling stats? I know what girls are like. I know what it's like. I've been around girls who've done that, you know?
Okay.
And I was just getting to the stage where I was like, I'm not enjoying this. I'm not doing things that I'm proud of, because I'm not putting out performances I'm proud of, even though I'm smashing it in training. I just can't do it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a huge relief. I can't tell you, like a weight was lifted.
Well, that was the end of like professional cycling life, right?
Uh-huh.
And up till now, for sure, professional life in sports as well. I don't know what your plans are, but what a crazy story, eh? It's like as you just told me, life can change so fast. And at one point, you are thinking like the world is totally open for you to go out and explore and do the things you want to achieve. And then, sudden moment, something happens, and it's totally for years a different direction. And yeah, crazy. What was it like in like the weeks, days, weeks, months after you made the decision to like retire? What was it like? Because you didn't need to go out for training. You suddenly there's something else to explore or something like that, right?
Yeah, it was really nice. I definitely, like, initially it was really hard because I was in that really intense therapy. And I didn't have the energy to go out on my bike. I was so exhausted from just doing the therapy. But then as the summer went on, I had the opportunity to like do things with my family and my friends and with Yuri, like going to races with him and going on a family holiday to Canada that I hadn't, you know, I'd only been cycling for 5 years, but before that I'd been running for ages. I'd missed out on, and at the time it doesn't feel like missing out. I'm sure you can relate. But I just hadn't had that time of going away with my family and being like, I'll do a little 5K jog with my sister and I'll jump in the lake. I wasn't thinking, how am I going to get a bike out here? Like, nobody understands me. I wasn't having to do that. It just felt so fantastic.
Yeah.
and I really, really enjoyed it. And I think it showed me like what I can do with just a balance. I love training. I still love training and I still love exercising, being on my bike and running, whatever. But I don't have the same pressure around it, which just makes it a lot more enjoyable for me now.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Before we move on to, because of course we have been talking now for a long, long time already, but move on to the next like quick fire question round about Girona. In that year, 2024, the same year that you retired from professional cycling, you went back doing running.
Yeah.
And even triathlons at one point as well. But how the hell is that possible with like a knee?
I know.
1.5 or 2 years before is like smashed.
And I honestly have no idea. I really gradually started with running again. So I wasn't like ever thinking of, you know, oh, I'm going to race a half marathon like I did in Barcelona.
A couple of weeks ago.
Like I'm never going to, I wasn't ever thinking of that. So I was just like, let me run and see if I can. And then I've always been really curious. I think this is an athlete thing as well, about like what is good pain and bad pain and how far can I push this? And like watching that needle, like how far can I push it? And I think that for me, it was really interesting actually with running, like that I could see, okay, if I do this, it gets worse. If I do that, it's better. Like if I run 3 days a week, it's okay. If I run four, that's a no-go. And I started using this app as well that had like a running program on it. I use Runner and that just gave me this structure. And I've just really been able to slowly build it up. And I actually think that the soft tissue in my knee has kind of responded really well to it, and that it's been able to strengthen from that impact. So you don't have impact on the bike.
True.
So I think that just by being gradual, I've been able to get back running properly. It's incredible, by the way, because like running was my absolute love. I got into cycling, but I love running. So it makes me very happy that I can run.
We'll talk a bit about running a little bit more after we do the quick fire questions about Girona.
Okay.
Since when are you living in Girona? Well, we've talked about it, but
first
since
of January 2022, yeah.
Here is the one. We've talked about it a little bit already before the recording. What's your favorite place for coffee in Girona?
That's good. I'd often go to Hidden, but I think the best coffee is Tramontana.
Tramontana. Mm. What is your favorite bike loop?
I just ride the same loops all the time. I often go out to Llagostera and just add on little bits by the airport or, yeah.
Question this, which I don't have on the list, but I'm thinking about right now. Do you actually pass the place where the crash happened?
Yeah.
Sometimes?
Sometimes I do. I often would try and avoid it, but if I'm passing by there, I'll just take a second to be like, yeah. I was here and now I'm alive and I'm cycling past it. And how fantastic is that?
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's really nice. Wow.
About running, do you prefer running on Vias Verdes or have you already been discovering some trail running as well on Els Angels?
I think I've been on Els because sometimes I go out with the Overland group and we do, we've done like up to, what's it called?
San Miguel.
Yeah. And we've done that. But honestly, it is way harder on those trails. I prefer just the Via Verde.
What do you feel it as well in your knee?
Yeah, I think when I'm going down, I think everybody feels it when they're going down those trails because they're really, it's hard to like let your body fall with it. But
probably for you especially.
Yeah, I'm really like cautious of my knee. So I think the Via Verde is a bit nicer.
Have you been to a Girona football game?
Yeah, I have. Oh my God, it was amazing. I mean, I don't know much about football. I went with Yuri, but I just loved watching the fans. I just think it's so amazing. Like they really are diehard fans. It's incredible. They just didn't stop cheering from minute one to minute, I don't know, 90?
90, it's true. Yeah, yeah. I saw you were on a picture with the mascot, the dog. And
yeah,
there,
yeah.
Right?
It was great. We had got like a tour and everything. It was
nice.
Really cool.
What is your favorite restaurant in Girona?
I don't think you can beat Bartali's. I've got to say it. Like, it's just such a good, I mean, the Aperol Spagliato, the drink, I get that, and the Diavola pizza.
Diavola pizza always.
The baked provolone and a focaccia. Oh my God, it's just so good.
Yeah. Nice. What is your favorite thing to do in or around Girona besides exercising or training?
bring Ishbin out for a walk. I just love it. Bring her to the park or, yeah, anything with Ishbin. I love it.
What do you dislike the most about Girona?
I think I said it already, like how quickly incredible things, feats of exercise get normalized, like which can just feel surreal.
Yeah.
Like how am I running with someone who's done a 3-hour marathon and isn't like so happy? You know, it's really, really crazy.
Yeah. What do you like the most about Girona?
I just think there's so many like-minded people here. I didn't ever have that in the west of Ireland when I was growing up, like people who were into sport the same way I am. And I think I'm just surrounded by that here. It's such a breath of fresh air. I love it.
Last question. Do you have a hidden gem in Girona? Something people who visit Girona should definitely do or visit?
I think Bagnoles is a lovely lake. It's probably not a hidden gem.
Sure.
And I love Bestia, like for a meal as well.
Bagnoles and Bestia.
Yeah, Bagnoles and Bestia.
Bagnoles is nice. Yeah,
Bagnoles
sure.
is nice. Yeah. If just a nice day out.
Oh,
and we went to a beach, Playa de Castel. We went there recently, which was super nice.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of nice beaches, of course.
Yeah, this one I just found, like, I just found it on ChatGPT. And
okay.
Then, yeah, really nice beach there.
So Ishbin is going to be enjoying a lot of beach time in the upcoming first summer of her.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing.
looking towards future, right?
Yeah.
It's like we've discovered and talked about so many things already. And for sure, we are getting towards the end of the podcast. But you're exploring different things, and you've been doing it already for like a year, I think, right now.
Yeah.
And one of it is running, but also, one of it is indeed, as you told me, like having talks about road safety.
Uh-huh.
Where do you see yourself in the future?
It's so difficult because I think when I first stopped racing, I thought I had this like pathway in my head of how things would go. And it's always an adjustment for any athlete when they retire, but it definitely hasn't been how I thought it would go. Like at the moment, I'm mainly doing content creation, which is not what I want to do as a career. And I also I'm doing the talks, which I'm really passionate about. Like I really genuinely love going to give a talk on road safety and trying to connect with people who can make a difference for our safety on the road. But I think that I found that a really difficult part is kind of knowing what's next. And I think as well with my Instagram, it's always been a bit about like, my story's always felt a bit relatable. It's always been like, okay, and now I'm really struggling to make it as a pro, like, and now I'm struggling to come back from an injury. People can relate to those kind of things, or like when you're chasing a goal. And I found that in the past year, it hasn't felt to me that it's as relatable. But what is relatable is the fact that I don't really know what I'm doing. Yeah. I think that a lot of people go through stages like that. And sometimes I feel I've had stages in my life where I'm like, yeah, I've really got my shit together. Like this is going well. And then I have a period where I'm like, it's not going well. And I just feel like, not that it's not going well, because it is going well for me now, but I feel like I'm in one of those periods now where I'm like, what am I doing? Mm-hmm. And I'm just trying to figure out. I definitely thought after I stopped that, and I've been applying for it, but like jobs in media, sports media was what I really wanted to get into. And it just hasn't like worked out the way I expected it to, or that I wanted it to. Yes, of course. But I'm really determined to get into that. But I struggle. I'm just haven't made those like pathways yet. But yeah. I think, the most relatable part is that I don't really know what exactly it is that I'm doing. But I'm enjoying it all. Yeah. I think I'm lucky that I get to make money off doing cool cycling things on my Instagram. That is incredible that I get to make money off running, and that I genuinely enjoy doing both of those things, and that I get to talk about road safety and hopefully make a bit of a difference.
Yeah.
So, it's like I'm doing a bit of a mishmash at the moment. And in terms of like where I would imagine that going, I would hope that the kind of public speaking thing could take off, hopefully, a bit more. I would really like to connect with like bigger companies who, you know, have like fleets of drivers out on the road, for example. I'd really like to see if I can build on that and also build on my sports media. And in 5 years' time, that's kind of this sports media, that's still the dream.
Yeah. Oh, who knows? Things we talked about, things can go negatively, very quickly changing in a different way, but also positively, of course.
Yeah, true. You never know who you can meet like one day to the next. And I'm just really open to any opportunity. Yeah. So.
And talking about sports and future things, soon a sub 40 minute try on a 10 kilometer run. Right?
See, that's funny because like I'm also now that I live in Girona, I'm like, oh, sub 40, that's not good at all. Because like you're around people here who are like running 32 minutes or something. But yeah, that's what I aim to do next weekend. I hope that I can do that.
Where are you doing?
Escala.
Cool.
Yeah. Nice. And yeah, I have like a couple of half marathons that I want to do throughout the rest of the year.
A couple of. Not just one. No.
Well, the reason that I want to do a couple is because if I can, you heard it here first. I actually don't think I've even said this to Yuri. If I can do sub 130 in both of those, I'm going to go for a sub 3 marathon next year. Wow. So there we go.
Wow. Going for a marathon. And, only, what is it? Only three or then within 4 years after such an incredible thing that happened as well, the injury and the crash. And insane that you're for sure only already able to run, but even doing these things. And you've done a half marathon already, right?
Yeah, 127.
Yeah, crazy.
So if I can do two more in and around that time, then we can go for the marathon. Yeah. But I want my first marathon to be sub 3.
And what is the... other thing you talked about at the beginning, that's next month you're going...
Oh, I'm going to... When Yuri's going to Vancouver to do the T100, I'm also going to do like a little bike packing trip just around that and before that. Vancouver and then over to Vancouver Island, which is where he'll be. I've got cousins over in Vancouver, so yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's so beautiful. Cool. I just love... I'd actually planned to do it from the US, from like Seattle, but I wanted actually... I just really love Vancouver. I just think it's just an amazing area. And I just really can't wait to go there on my bike.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before we start wrapping up the podcast, I've got a few questions from the followers on Instagram. Hey. We asked for a couple of things. And there is Yuri as well.
Oh, Yuri finally arrived
from the swim. So if cycling wasn't a thing, in what sport would you want it to be good at? And also maybe not triathlon and
yeah, I think I go for the ones that I said at the beginning. I'd either do like I'd do gymnastics. Yeah, I think that would be cool. Like it's something, again, like I said, we do such a like a obviously sometimes our sport looks beautiful, but it's also about like just suffering. I want to try and look beautiful like when I'm exercising.
Mm-hmm. Who is your favorite Irish athlete?
Oh, I think we have so many amazing Irish athletes at the moment. I'm thinking all female athletes. We have incredible female athletes in Ireland at the moment. And I just really enjoy, we've got great sprinters. We've got incredible cyclists. We've got great track cyclists. I love them all.
Good answer. Yeah. I think this was a question from somebody who wants probably to hear his own name, but it can be that you're going to say something else. Who is the best photographer in Girona?
Oh, Lova. Everybody hire Lova.
This was his question indeed. last question. And I think I know the answer already a little bit, but it's also depending on somebody who just entered the building. Do you see yourself keep living in Girona, or where would you see yourself move to?
We're here for Yuri's career right now, which I'm happy to do. I mean, I can't imagine him training for what he does in the west of Ireland. But eventually, I'm just an Irish girl. I just want to get back to Ireland. So hopefully, west of Ireland, peaceful life in the countryside with a garden for our little dog. That's the end goal.
Sounds lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah, sounds lovely. Well, Imogen, we have been talking already for an hour and almost 10 minutes right now. So time flies by. So I think it's time to wrap up the podcast over here. I want to thank you so much for like making some time in a busy weekend to come on the show and talk about all the crazy but also cool and interesting things that you have experienced so far. I always end the interview with one question, and that's the following. What is the one thing you would want to say to your younger self?
Don't take up cycling. No, I'm joking. What would I say to her? My favorite quote is just win the day. I've always thought as an athlete, that's like one of the best things you can focus on. Just keep putting one foot in front of the other, win the day. And, it will bring you incredible places.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Again, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Where can people who want to follow you on your, well, probably crazy running events coming up soon? I don't know. and all the other things about, that you're going to do in life. Where can people follow you?
Instagram is where I pretty much share everything. I think I'm on Facebook. There's a page on there as well. But Instagram is my main thing.
And probably soon somewhere on cycling media and these kind of things, right?
Yeah, hopefully. On Eurosport.
We'll see about that. Again, thank you so much. I'll see you guys in the next Grit Grind Giro. 1, 2, 3, 4. This podcast is brought to you by the Dutch media platform Triathlon Inside.